So yes, joy, oh joy, and little guffaws there. But yes, we're going to talk about colitis for a few moments. Something, if you suffer from it, can be absolutely debilitating. So what is it and why does it happen, colitis, Keith?
Well, I've actually suffered from colitis a couple of times from parasitic infections, but there's lots of reasons that can drive inflammation. You can often see in the colon, you can see things like ulcerative colitis, you can see Crohn's disease, you can see inflammation of the digestive tract, and again, it's multifactorial. There may be a gene that predisposes you to having colitis, a bit like celiac disease, a bit like ulcerative colitis. It's usually an insult of some kind or a bombardment over many years that has caused you to have this. It might be a passing pathogen, parasite, bug that might be in the system that might be just irritating the digestive tract. Could be a food, could be an environmental toxin, could be emotional stress. It could be lots of things that can cause colitis. If you're not digesting your food properly and it's just sitting in the bowel, producing loads of nasty smells and chemicals and just basically raising toxicity, that can cause colitis as well. So yeah, lots of different things, but usually from think anything we see the term itis with, we're thinking inflammation, and there's something that's causing that irritation, and you can usually find out what it is with the right gut test.
Could smoking irritate and cause colitis?
Yeah, it can, and I have, if I recall, there are some research things I've read on that. I don't understand the exact mechanics of it, but I'm sure there is, from an inflammatory perspective, and the destructive compounds that you take into, given that I think there's arsenic when you smoke. Is it arsenic?
Yeah, there is.
So arsenic is a heavy metal, and heavy metal toxicity will drive lots of autoimmune processes within the body because we're basically having to deal with this kind of burden. So yeah, there's lots of things that can be considered from an inflammatory perspective. I'd say find out what's driving the inflammation. If it's something to be gotten rid of, is it a lifestyle factor that the person needs to take on board, and do they need to raise their kind of antioxidant or redox status?
Just looking at some of the messages coming in, canola oil is one we see very often on shelves. Khalid has asked, what's your view on canola oil in the diet?
Canola oil, I don't like using it. Some people use it for what's called so-called essential fatty acid deficiencies, but the use of essential fatty acids in some people I think is quite tenuous. I think it's alpha-linolenic acid, which is supposedly has some anti-inflammatory properties, but there's a bit of a... I'm sitting on the fence with some of this at the moment, but I usually don't recommend canola oil, which is rapeseed oil, I think it generally was. But a lot of oils come from genetically modified crops which have been intensively sprayed with lots and lots of pesticides. It's a polyunsaturated fatty acid as well.
Okay.
So from that perspective, it can help raise inflammation levels. So I generally stay away from... most people use this for heating, remember, so when you heat it, it becomes relatively rancid very quickly, and it can cause oxidation issues and inflammation issues within the arterial system. So I would generally go for the heavier fats.
I've been having pain in the lower chest on the left side, and seems to be in the rib area. Could this be related to a heart problem? I'm 31 years of age and I've done my cholesterol test 6 months ago, which was 200.
Just because someone has a high cholesterol level, it's not going to say, oh, my heart.
Is that high, 200?
What would be considered a borderline, depending on whose lab you look at and which stratification that you use. But remember, it's an inflammatory process going on, could be mediated by stress. I would say check out the structure. The way that you breathe has a huge impact on things like anxiety levels, on structural integrity. Is the diaphragm working properly? How expansive are the ribs? What's going on in there? And maybe this person just needs a good structural exam and some neuromuscular therapy or soft tissue therapy to help release the rib cage and the way that they're breathing. But you wouldn't say just because someone has a pain in the lower part of the chest that it's related to the heart. Remember, the nerve pathways, for example, follow various different areas. It's like when you do get a heart attack, you generally feel it in the arm and the neck. So watch out if you're getting that. But it might just be an issue related to a car crash you had 20 years ago where your neck muscle's out of alignment. And you need to look at this in the context of the global picture and the person. But don't start worrying just because you've got some
pain.
But do
go and get it checked out.
But do get it checked out, definitely. Let's get it checked out. But don't let people's anxiety just run it everywhere. But, you know, a structural approach might be looking at this. And if you want to assess for specific cardiovascular incidents, you can have homocysteine checked, you can have fibrinogen, C-reactive protein, and lactose dehydrogenase. These are all compounds that can be assessed via clinical lab assessments, and they can be done here in Dubai.
Mm. I think what you're highlighting there, which is very interesting, is the idea of pain, and it can be something related to what you least expect.
Yep.
And to understand, that, as you've said earlier, the significance of your posture and your mobility and what a difference that makes to your internal organs, what's happening inside the body. Kevin's text in here, what's the quickest way to get rid of tennis elbow? I've just been diagnosed and I'm on pain medication, but would rather be doing something proactive. What's the best?
I would always check the neck and the back if someone's got an issue in their elbow. It's usually an over-recruitment of the forearm muscles, which if there is dysfunction in the shoulder joint, dysfunction in the middle back muscles, there's not enough extensibility there, their neck can't rotate properly. That's a big issue, with mechanical issues cascading down from, say, the head and below. So bit of soft tissue work, corrective exercise program to strengthen up the back, get the shoulders stable, get the hips stable as well, because that might be contributing to it as well. And musculoskeletal stuff is, with the right approach, is generally easier to solve than you think. But the pain medication should be gotten rid of, because that long-term use of pain meds causes gastrointestinal degradation anyway. But structural stuff, yeah, good structural therapist, like myself, of course, can deal with that. Or anyone who can do that.
Presumably core strength is one of the most important things.
Core strength, I think core strength is a bit of a kind of wide term that people misinterpret, because out here, core training means blitzing your abs to hell until you have a six-pack, and that causes a lot of problems to the core, because you lose the intrinsic stabilizers. You have the multifidus, you have the transversus, you have the deep pelvic floor, you have the upper kind of pelvic diaphragm, which is involved in the scalenes. And when these muscles are overworked, they cause problems which break down the back. So if you're doing a core training program, it needs to be analyzed why you're doing that. If you're doing a core program to get a six-pack, you're actually breaking down the core, and the core becomes dysfunctional.
So it's very difficult for people to know exactly where to turn, isn't it? What's your advice if somebody's thinking about that? Where should they turn?
I would say anybody who can offer them the right approach, and that is difficult in itself, because I'm a multidisciplinary practitioner. So when somebody comes to see me, they get the structure, they get the hormonal, they get the gut test, and we try and put a package together that gets them on their way. But you know, you can see osteopaths, you can see nutritionists. I like to use functional medicine practitioners when I'm looking at nutritional issues. Chiropractors, and you do a good job, but it's like going to the osteopath and a chiropractor. It's great having those bones released, but bones are relatively inert. They don't move. It's the muscles that move the bones, that are out of alignment. So get manipulated, then get a soft tissue therapist, then get someone who knows how they can write a program to deal with all of that.
And you do all work together, don't you? I know that you will refer to a chiropractor if you think that's
absolutely.
And you know, you're very much aware of all the other practitioners here in the city.
Yeah, and I refer to doctors as well, because I'm not a doctor. I have stuff that's way beyond my skill set and medical scope of practice that I can't deal with it, and I need backup sometimes. I try and work within the realms of stuff that I can give to people, so they're comfortable in what they're doing, and it's usually based on nutrition, supplements, and good structural programming. Bear in mind, I mean, things like RDAs, we talk about what's an RDA for vitamin C or vitamin E. Some people's need for that varies hundredfold, and there is a lot of the RDAs that are recommended on nutrient supplements are often way under what they need to be.